I mean, we talked a lot about Akira Toriyama on a recent episode, and I've been kind of getting the feeling, Lucas, maybe I should get back into Dragon Ball.
Okay, this is a fun development.
Yeah.
Now, the question, the heads, I could already see the Discord fingers a-clacking away at their keyboards, Will.
Hmm.
Are you going to watch Kai, or are you going to watch the original dub?
Well, I mean, the thing that I'm most likely to do first is actually read the original Dragon Ball manga.
Oh, hell yes, Will.
It is
this
very accessible.
This is what we love to
hear. It's very accessible in the Shonen Jump app. You know, granted, like, I don't have the money for that right now. But when I do, I think I may, because I actually have the first two volumes of the Dragon Ball manga in, like, physically. Like, I'm looking at them right now on my shelf. I never got any more past that, but I do have those first two.
It's a manga day. We're it's manga week here at Elwood City Limits because my copy of the Initial D Omnibus Volume 1 came in the mail today. I'm looking at it right now on my bed, and it collects, I think, the first two, maybe the first three volumes of Initial D, so I'm really excited to get into that.
How big are we talking? Like, coffee table book? Door stopper?
No, not quite. You know how manga's form factor is a little bit smaller. It's not like a comics omnibus where it's like a tome, but it does condense, I think, the first, maybe just the first two volumes, but I am really excited to get into it. So far, I flipped through it briefly, and the art is just fantastic. If you're like me and you like looking in at pictures of cars, drawings of cars, it seems like a good time.
Well, speaking of manga, of course, it's time to talk about American manga. That's not even the right form. We're talking about Arthur here on Elwood City Limits, the episodic Arthur podcast. Will Young here with Lucas Mancini. American manga sounds like it could be an indie band.
Kind of like American football.
Yes, exactly. So we've got ourselves another episode here as we're pretty much right in the middle of Arthur season 20, especially now with the reduced episode count. So usually it takes us a little bit longer to get halfway through, but before you know it, we're gonna be done with this season. But before we get to that, of course, we want to head over to elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com, our email address where you can send us email. And the one we have today is, of course, from Ashley Hollingsworth. So let's get to that before we talk about the episode. Hey, Will and Lucas, and I guess Mike. You asked if anyone had class pets when they were younger, and I have a memory of our first or second grade class having a small pet lizard. I remember we'd stand around and freak out whenever it would lose its tail. Also, we'd often have people bring in baby chicks and hamsters for us to pet and coo over. It was fun until they'd inevitably poop on the desk and make us all scream. So, bringing pets in to class for like a one-off, I definitely had that happen. I don't remember right off. The funny thing is when I think about that, I don't even think about something that happened in like grade school. I remember the time that I went over to a friend's house and watched him feed his pet snake. That was a bit of an intense experience because it's the kind of snake that eats, you have to buy like live mice for it. So it was very much like, I'm going to take the snake out of its enclosure. It's normally pretty chill, but because it's hungry and it's feeding time, I'm going to, you know, put the mouse near it. Do not put your feet on the floor. Do not make any sudden movements, or he will think that you are also food. And it was a very interesting moment and to observe the snake in its nature, you know.
I know it's funny that you bring up snakes and reptiles and stuff of that nature because I do remember, the quote-unquote the lizard guy coming to school.
Yeah.
I assume these animals were hopped up on sedatives or something, but there would always be like a lizard guy with a snake wrapped around him. But again, not the same thing as class pet. A pet that ostensibly lives in the classroom, and I assume when everyone goes home, the pet stays there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, true. One that you all have to look after within the same. And then there's the trope of a lot of kids shows of like, it's my turn to take the school pet home, which we did in the last episode of Arthur. So yeah, it's definitely from somewhere, not from Eastern Canada though. Getting to the recent episode, season 20 is proving to be odd for me in an unintentional way. First, the Arthur meme where he eats a whole stack of pancakes. I only saw this clip for the first time about 2 weeks ago. I've never seen it used as a meme. It was when I was looking for a good Arthur gif and it came up. I was convinced this was a fan-created thing because it looked so off. I hated it, but I had to watch the loop a few times to confirm what I was actually seeing. Bunny Trouble was bizarre, not only because of the animal hierarchy. Outside of that, it's a mid-episode. I couldn't stop thinking about the hierarchy the entire time. It's just weird. What I did like about the episode and the season so far are the various animation styles that are used, especially in Fern's story. It's interesting when the animators give us a different style because it's so out of the box for Arthur. It's cool to see the animators stretch their creative muscles. Thinking about Hop Along Bunny, do you guys remember the very first book you read on your own? I don't remember the name of mine, but it was a book about a duckling. It could be The Chick and the Duckling. Stay Frosty, and that's from Ashley. I wonder if that's... When I was a kid, there was a book about the ugly duckling. So I wonder if that was maybe it. But the first book that I ever read on my own, I actually do remember. Now that you mention it, it was a Berenstain Bears chapter book. Now, I will say I probably read picture books on my own before this. So the very, very first book, I'm not sure. But I remember there is a Berenstain Bears chapter book that I read, and that was the first time I ever read a chapter book to myself. And I remember the sense of accomplishment that came with finishing it. So that sticks out in my mind.
Perhaps it was Make Way for Ducklings, which was a beloved children's book and one I remember from my childhood that's duckling-related, along with The Ugly Duckling. It's tricky for me to remember, to be perfectly honest with you. My mom was a librarian growing up, and so reading was a big part of our routine. So it's hard for me to think of, like, what was the first... This is much older. This is certainly far from the first book I ever read, but there was a prompt going around Twitter a few months ago that was like, what was your, like, favorite book when you were 12? Don't try to be cool.
Yeah.
I loved the Alex Rider books. He was, like, sort of a James Bond type figure. I don't know if you remember Alex Rider's Stormbreaker by Anthony Horowitz, kind of a hack airport novelist, but I loved that stuff back in the day.
Is that where Will Ospreay got the name from?
Perhaps. I mean, he is a British guy, so that's kind of likely, given that he's in our kind of age group. My favorite children's book, I was actually talking with someone about this recently because we were talking about kind of the art of the children's book and how I think people fail to give picture books specifically the proper due and how there's actually quite a bit of intention and artfulness into creating a really good picture book. And the medium's kind of been bogged down in modern days with kind of gross digital art and really lazy writing. And if you go back and look at some of the kind of classic picture books from the 70s, there is a almost immeasurable kind of secret sauce and X factor with them that make them so timeless and well-regarded. So my favorite picture book when I was a kid was Donald Cruz's Freight Train. Which, let me tell you, Will, is a riveting look at all the train cars on this freight train. And we got 24 pages of train cars. So there's the caboose. And then eventually, at some point, the freight train goes through a tunnel. Spoiler warnings. I know. At some point, the freight train... And the whole picture book, Will, goes black. It's pretty crazy. And then it comes out at the other end of the tunnel. But yeah, that book's from like 1978. And I'm assuming my mom got it from... Because again, one of her main areas of study when she was getting her master's of library science was children's literature. So she did extensive research into kind of what are the classic children's books. But that was one that especially stuck out from my childhood. I have these very fond memories of Freight Train, and I must have been like 4 or 5.
This book looks great. I would have loved it if I had read it as a kid. So lucky you. I was, you know, very much a Thomas kid, as I've mentioned before. So this would have been right up my alley. Yeah, thank you very much for your email, Ashley. Of course, ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com is the email address to send to. patrons over at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. Remember, you have access to the latest episode of ECL Origins, where we're talking about the amazing world of Gumball. And patrons, you've got a couple of cool things coming your way for the end of March into April, and we'll talk about that near the end of the episode. You also get ECL a week early and a lot of other perks, as well as access to our Discord. And we want to say thank you to some of our patrons, which is another perk of being on our Patreon, patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. Patrons we want to thank include Stella and Joe Sue, patrons like Marlo Stanfield and Peebs, Valeria and Lawrence, thank you, Baby Show Addict, Gabs and Veronica Tram, Emma, Jenny Cardenas, and Melissa H. Thank you to Oscar Vest and Ben Spatall and Hannah Lee. Thank you to Iman Salehian and Emma Graybeal, and thank you to Young Wee. All right, we weren't exactly champing at the bit for this episode because it's right in the title, Bud's Naughty Problem. This is a Bud episode. So buckle up. This is what we got going on. And when I say naughty, K-N-O-T-T-Y. It's not like he's got some kind of mischievous vexation here. No, he's
I'm up to no good. I'm hankering to do some mischief.
No, not our sweet little angel. He would never do such a thing, wouldn't he?
I'm fixing to cause trouble.
No, this is Bud's last name is not Tibble. He's not going to do anything like that. He's going to be talking about what buds do. And by buds, I mean friends. This is what he says in the cold open. He's talking about how buds are always trying to do impossible things. It's him and DW. They're climbing a mountain, but it's really a pile of clothes. They're swimming with sharks, but they're really swimming in the kiddie pool. And they're fighting the world's smelliest monster. They're getting a used diaper from the garbage and putting it into a different garbage after it topples over. I don't know. But this may be something that even these buds can't handle, whatever it is that's going on in this episode. So it's interesting that we're talking about like the first book that we ever finished, because this episode deals with a bit of a childhood landmark itself. So Bud and LaDonna start off this episode. They're arguing over Lucas the Funnies. Like, I can't believe, I'm a bit in shock that a cartoon in the 2010s used the phrase the Funnies.
I mean, I was trying to remember, I used to be a big fan of when newspapers had comics. I'm dating myself by saying when. I guess they still do.
Yeah, that's true.
But print media is about to be completely gone from our province, so I haven't checked in recently. But I think we still called them the Funny Pages.
Yeah, the Funnies is a regional shortening of the Funny Pages, for sure. I've heard both. Mm-hmm. We actually used to have a pretty good one. Now, I haven't had a newspaper subscription since I lived at home. But when I lived at home, the Saturday pages had the four page, the big one. So you'd have like The Born Loser, Baby Blues, Sherman's Lagoon, those biographies of celebrities with the illustrations, Garfield, Foxtrot. Like when I was younger, I was all about the Funnies. I guess I would just call them the comics. Like I always just call them the comics because that's what they were to me. So they're arguing over this, and Bud doesn't get the Funnies, but he does get to look around the advertisements, and he sees a new pair of boots that he likes. Now the problem is, I should say, before we get into what the problem is, because that's the bigger part of the episode, Bud imagines this pair of, like, they look like hiking boots. And in his mind, he goes stomping around in a Godzilla scenario through town with these big old boots on. And they're even apparently strong enough to withstand and kick a meteor back into orbit. So he really wants these boots.
Complaining time. I got my complaining hat on.
Go for it.
When he kicks the meteor, Bud looks so off model. His head is so big on his body that I had to go back and check again to be like, wait a minute, is this like some sort of intentional, like they gave Bud a big head to display that he's younger and this is a flashback? Like,
yeah.
My brain did not compute this as a mistake. I was like, oh, this must have been authorial intent. Because his head is so dang big, And no, it's just a mistake. It just looks wrong. I suppose they're trying to do a perspective where it's like the camera is above Bud, so his body is smaller and his head is bigger, but it just looks wrong.
Could it be arthurial intent?
Oh my goodness gracious.
Okay, now I gotta see this. Because I didn't notice this. Okay, here comes the meteor.
It's not when he's kicking the meteor. It's when he's in the puddle splashing around.
Oh, I just got it. Yes. So I think it is his perspective thing. That does look really strange, though. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to film him overhead, but I've never seen anything like this in Arthur before, where it's just his head is like three sizes too big.
Yeah. So he really wants this pair of boots. But the problem is, Bud doesn't know how to tie his shoes. In fact, as he says, truly, I am vexed. But if he can learn how to do it, how to tie his shoes, then his mom will get him the boots. So that's what we're trying to do. DW is going to try to teach Bud how to tie his shoes. Well, since a similar question, Lucas, do you have a memory of when you would have learned to tie your own shoes?
I know that I was doing the double crisscross method probably when I was already too old to be doing that. So it took me a very long time to internalize around the tree and through the bunny hole, which is the correct method. But I think well into my teens, I was doing one crossover and then making two separate loops and then crossing over the two separate loops. It probably wasn't until near the end of junior high or high school that I truly mastered around the tree and through the bunny hole, which now that I say out loud to, you know, the hundreds of people who listen, I'm actually quite embarrassed. But, you know, this is, dear listeners, this is me being vulnerable with you. So please be kind to learn that. And something as basic as tying your shoes, I guess, escaped me until older age.
I think I would have learned how to do it around when I was 6 or 7. But, you know,
okay, we're really piling it on here, Will.
No, listen, it took a while. And believe me, Velcro was my best friend. I went kicking and screaming into tying my shoes because Velcro was so good. Like, why should I need to learn when Velcro sneakers exist? Come on. But I will say, though, Lucas, I guess I'm admitting this, but it doesn't feel like an admittance because, like, I still do, like, the bunny ears type of shoe tying. And I've had a couple people be like, you still do it that way? And I'm like, is there another way to do it? Like, I just always did it that way. So I'm not interested in judging you for your shoe tying technique, Lucas. If it works and it gets the shoes on you, then who cares? And I certainly hope that our audience feels the same way. So DW tries a few different methods, or Bud tries a few different methods here. They go to Emily here. Emily is not often in the Bud and DW episodes, so she is around. She shows DW and Bud a DVD called Martin the Mime Ties His Shoes, and it is a mime simulating tying his shoes, which Bud is confused by, of like, well, if he can simulate tying his shoes, why doesn't he actually do it? And Emily is like when you try to show your friends a YouTube video that you think is funny, and then they're like, wait, what? I don't get it. What? Why did he say that? It's like, because that's the joke.
I will say that this segment is very dated by the fact that they're using a DVD and putting it in the CDR tray in a laptop. You know, what was the last time you saw a laptop, Will, with a CDR tray?
True.
You know, I feel like this episode, it's 2015. At this point, Bud should have been pulling up a YouTube video, I think.
And I think we do have a YouTube version of this, but it is a full movie. I don't know if in 2015, 2016, could find full movies on YouTube like you can sometimes now.
I have it paused on the DVD menu, which is another lost art. You know, I've been getting all these DVDs from the library, and whenever I boot them up, and they have a full-on animated menu, I'm like, this is delightful. But we're seeing play, setup, scenes, and extras on Martin the Mime Ties His Shoes. One can only imagine and speculate what these extras might contain. You know, do we have a DVD commentary of Martin the Mime? Do we have a making of doc featurette? Do we have some sort of the original trailers? One can only hope.
A silent commentary track for a mime DVD would be really funny.
That would be funny.
That's a missed opportunity.
Well, maybe in if Arthur had kept going, we would see, you know, a parody of boutique Blu-ray distribution companies putting this out, you know, with a 4K restoration of Martin the Mime Ties' shoes, maybe by Vinegar Syndrome or Arrow Video would have a lavish 4K re-release of this.
The Criterion version of Martin the Mime Ties' shoes with an introduction by Ira Glass or somebody, I don't know. And then, Lucas, your favorite character shows back up. It's Rapti, Bud's imaginary dinosaur friend Rapti, who is not particularly helpful.
You know, there was a lot of talk in our early discussions of Arthur Will about our least favorite characters.
Oh, yes.
At the start, it was Muffy. You know, then it became Prunella, and we grew to love both those characters. Everybody remembers the Brain era, where we were really hating on Brain for a while.
Yeah, Brain hasn't been around for quite a bit. I'm actually quite surprised now that you say that.
As of late, it really has been the LaDonna and Bud hate show. But this episode really made something click in my head, which is that, you know, at least LaDonna and Bud talk in a funny accent. And it's fun to do the voice.
That's true.
You know?
It is.
They do wear hats. They have something like that. There is a characterization to them somewhat. Bud did make me laugh this episode when he said, "I am Vex."
Yeah, I did laugh too.
Rapti, on the other hand, can go dig a hole and bury himself in it and never come back. I cannot stand Rapti. I want him gone. I think he is indicative of, dare I say, a lack of imagination. And he is an imaginary character. I've said this before. His design is, he's just kind of Reptar, you know, an iconic kind of character from children's television in terms of, you know, a character that's captured the imagination of babies. and I just think he's so lazy. And when you think of the other imaginary friends, they're imbued with so much creativity, and Arthur really uses them as an example of an opportunity to get out there. But Rapti is a dinosaur wearing sneakers. We've seen it a million times. This is Barney, you know? I really am not a Rapti fan. And he makes me mad when I see him.
Yeah, no, you every chance that we get here with Rapti is you've been not shy about sharing your feelings. So that has not changed. I have no feelings on Rapti. So this dislike is very interesting to me. He does. I mean, listen, he's not funny. Like, I'm not sticking up for him or anything. He's got this bit about how, oh, he can't reach his hands together to clap because he's a T-Rex or tie shoes. Yeah, it's just big old shrug for me. Bud tries to tie his shoes on a pair of Dad Reed's shoes, but despite all of these attempts, he's still unsuccessful. And in fact, that night, Bud imagines smaller versions of DW and Emily essentially haunting him. This felt fever dreamy because I don't remember if it had the typical Arthur dream noise around it. It's just like Bud was getting ready for bed, then he just imagines this happening. And it's like, yeah, I've had that happen to me when I've had like 103 degree fever. And they're belittling him for not being able to do apparently simple stuff like write a check or buy a car or drive a car. So if Bud can't tie his sneakers, then what hope does he have for all of these rites of passage that we end up doing? I can do all of those things.
I actually really liked this sequence. I thought this was the highlight of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it, accomplished multiple different things. For one, it's just a creative dream sequence. They really capture, it is creepy seeing little DW and Emily walk around. I thought it was funny when they start talking about all the things Bud's not going to do. For some reason, writing a check is really funny to me. Like, oh my God, he's never going to be able to write a check. Like, an idea of a child being anxious about writing a check is, I don't know, I find that humorous. But the other thing, and I think this is actually really interesting from a narrative perspective, is this is a portrayal of anxious thinking, which we talk about a lot on Arthur, in terms of Bud is spiraling because his logic is flawed, right? He's doing this and then that,
yes,
right? He's saying, well, if I can't tie my shoes, that means, you know, I'm never going to be able to learn anything. And this is obviously illogical, but it's the product of an anxious mind, and probably pretty accurate to how children react to kind of an insurmountable task or something of that nature. And I know adults who are anxious on the prospect of buying a car if they've never done it before. So I thought, and we'll get to my overall feelings of this whole episode, but this little sliver, this sequence in particular, you know me, I love my Arthur dream sequences. I thought this was a solid modern one.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't really have any strong feelings to it, which tips my hand towards where we're going with this. But, I have basically one line left for this episode, because after this, LaDonna takes charge here and teaches Bud to tie his shoes through a bit of a montage where she kind of keeps drilling him on it and he's still not really getting it. But then eventually, the next day, he does it without thinking and he ties his sneakers and he can finally go to get the boots. But unfortunately, he tries them on in the store and he doesn't actually like them all that much. What he does like are the bright red laces that he instead gets for his sneakers. But he's not going to move on to tying to sneaker tying and just yet. He still prefers his boots, his rain boots that we always see him wearing, which is just like, yeah, we're not changing that character model. So he's going to wear boots probably for the rest of the series, but he can tie his sneakers. And now a word from us kids. This was an interesting lesson. I actually really liked this in terms of it's about kids teaching something they know how to do to other kids, which I think is an important skill to be able to learn at a young age. And we have a lot of different examples. The difficulty of some of these things, it spikes after a while. So we have one kid teaching other kids how to make paper fans or how to draw a cat. We have one kid who's teaching everybody about the rules of hockey, which I found very, very endearing. And then we get up to...
Clues, yeah. Clues, this video was filmed in New England, Alex.
And then we get up to cartwheels and walking on hands, which is like, whoa, we were talking about drawing cats like 30 seconds ago. I don't know about all this cartwheels and handstand nonsense. I can't do that. I've never been able to do that. But the kids are clearly taking the lesson of like, this is what it's like to teach people things. And I really liked that idea for like a lesson plan based on that Arthur episode we just watched. I also was interested here. So with the kid who's talking about the rules of hockey, he's projecting onto like a whiteboard, like a screen, I should say, a pull down screen, the template, like a diagram of like the hockey positions on a typical rink. But it's not like the overhead projector that you and I would have seen, you know, the plug-in one that uses lights and transparent sheets. It was some kind of like video projector. I couldn't exactly tell how this worked. I was fascinated by it.
Is it not just an overhead projector or no?
He's like away from it, kind of. He's on the side.
So it's not an overhead projector. It's literally a camera pointing down.
Oh.
And so this must be some sort of teaching tool where they just have a camera. Very interesting. Well, it's kind of like a high-tech version of the overhead projectors of old. If you remember learning my multiplication tables
on
an overhead projector with those kind of like laminated see-through sheets.
Mental math. But like every once in a while on A Word From Us Kids, especially as we go deeper into the show, we find like this is the technology that kids used to learn well after we were out of school, like the smart boards and stuff like that. And so this was another thing where I was like, whoa, they did not have this when I was little. Supporting this podcast is how it keeps going, and it's very easy to do. So here's how you can do that. If you're listening to this show and want to get the full back catalog of Elwood City Limits and all of its sister shows and offshoots, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and even more services. You can also go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/ElwoodCityLimits, for the full back catalog. If we aren't on a service you use, please let us know. You can interact with us on social media. We're on Twitter @ECL Podcast, Instagram @ElwoodCityLimits, and twitch.tv/ElwoodCityLimitsPod for our occasional streams. We're also on Facebook and Tumblr. Feel free to reach out to us on social media, or you can email us, and your email might be read on the show, ElwoodCityLimits@gmail.com. Finally, for exclusive content including entire side series like For the Kids, a PBS Kids podcast, and ECL Origins, subscribe to us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's all for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and now back to the show. Now we go on to That's My Grandma, which, again, tipped it off that it's going to be another episode for the smaller kids in here. And, you know, if you've been listening for long enough, there was at least a there has at least been a period where we have a couple of DW-based episodes a season, and they seem to be targeted towards a much a younger audience than even the audience watching Arthur. So a lot of times, at least personally, I don't end up loving these episodes, so I wasn't exactly looking forward to this, but, you know, let's go through it and talk about it. Arthur starts us off here. Everyone has something super special that they don't want to share. Mr. Ratburn has a very nice monogrammed fountain pen. Buster has a map of food shaped like continents that he's bit into sandwiches to make them look like different continents on a map. And Arthur has an issue of Bionic Bunny that he keeps in like a makeshift vault, which is like one of those plastic comic book bag holders that he keeps under like a poster of, he duct tapes under a poster of Bionic Bunny. It's actually kind of clever. I liked his vault, so to speak. And then DW interrupts the cold open to be like, nobody can have my super special thing. So we start off here again. Emily getting a lot of play in this episode. DW gets a phone call from Emily while she's being babysat by Grandma Thora, or at least while Grandma Thora is over at the house. Grandma Thora, this comes back into play a couple times here. She's making a kale cauliflower tart. You would, right?
Yeah, it's kale cauliflower tart. I would eat that like for supper tonight. There's nothing in there. Tart crust is a little odd. I will admit that.
Mm.
Sounds a little texturally strange, but there's absolutely nothing in that concoction that sounds unappetizing. And I'm not even trying to play devil's advocate. You know, sometimes we do this for humor, Will, where I'm like, oh, I'll eat the gross thing. You know, fish and maple syrup. Oh, I'll do it. Yeah. This sounds normal. I feel like they're running out of a landing strip with their gross Grandma Thora concoctions, because I feel like this is like real. This is just like what vegans eat.
This is definitely supposed to be disgusting to children. I'm not huge into this. I don't really like cauliflower all that much, so I'll pass. But yeah, certainly we've seen more disgusting from both Grandma Thora and just in Arthur generally. DW thankfully gets out of eating the kale cauliflower tart because Emily calls her. She is going to have to go with her mom to go wait at the DMV, which she and DW both agree is terrible. We do get a mention of Marie-Hélène, one of our favorite very minor characters, who is Emily's French babysitter slash au pair that who has a very like flagrantly French accent, but we only get a mention of her. She is she's away somewhere, and so that's why Emily will have to go with her mom to the DMV. But DW offers Grandma Thora to babysit, and apparently Grandma Thora is like the best babysitter ever. She does all these things that DW loves to do, and so recommends her to Emily. And that's indeed what happens. Emily gets babysat by Grandma Thora. But what ends up happening here is that Emily loves being babysat by Thora, and then Thora begins to babysit DW's other friends, like Visita. And now that she's more in demand as a babysitter, DW is a little bit worried that, well, Grandma Thora isn't going to like babysitting DW as much as she does everybody else, and then she's not going to even see Grandma Thora anymore. So she tries to get Grandma Thora, how many times can I say Grandma Thora in this episode, to babysit for her by encouraging Mom Reed to take her and Dad out to Wally's House of Schnitzel. which apparently she takes the bait on. I've never had schnitzel. I'm not even 100% certain what it is.
It's awesome.
Yeah?
Schnitzel's great. Yeah. It's like I want to say it's like a breaded pork.
Ooh.
It's like a pork cutlet. It's a pork cutlet. It's delicious, Will. It's really, really good.
Say no.
The best schnitzel I have ever had in my life, believe it or not, was I think this was in Ottawa. I think it was Ottawa. It might have been Toronto, but I was there for work. And I just looked up, like, what are the local restaurants? And there was some restaurant that was called, like, Three Brothers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or Two Brothers Restaurant. And they had... Oh, yeah. I found it here. I found their website. Three Brothers Restaurant. It's a Polish restaurant. Where is it? Location. Here we go. And I want to give them a shout out. Okay, Plymouth, Michigan. Okay, different Three Brothers family restaurant. There was maybe they're related, but it was Ottawa. Three Brothers.
Okay,
Ottawa. And it was delicious. It was a really good schnitzel.
Anybody in the Ottawa area, go check that out immediately. I'll keep that in mind. I really want to try schnitzel. So they take the bait. They're gonna go out, but Grandma Thora can't babysit DW. Instead, she gets a replacement sitter who never gets a name, but I was struck as soon as I saw her because she looks exactly like the Polly Lockett doll.
I wrote the same thing down. I was like, okay, DW is being babysat by Polly Lockett, and no one seems to be too surprised by this.
Yeah, this is we've seen reuse of character models and all this kind of stuff. I'm not scandalized by it or anything, but it was just like, oh, that hit me right away. And even more blatant, Lucas, it appears that whoever this babysitter is, she's like an elder Gen Z. There's a lot of like softballs at like, oh, she be on her it's because she be on that phone and True. She's taking selfies and not paying attention to DW. So DW doesn't really like her. And DW, similar to Bud in terms of anxiety spiraling, is imagining that it's going to get to the point where Grandma Thora will open the Grandma Thora babysitting service, which we see in this cutaway is run by Arthur, who is the overworked administration worker manning the phones. And DW can't even book in time with her own grandmother because she's so busy. And Arthur doesn't even really know who DW is when she calls him on the phone. Now, DW has a different plan. And we do see a bit of Nadine in this episode. I bring that up because there's a couple of strange visual things. So DW hatches a plan to get Grandma Thora to babysit the Tibbles and even trades them her beloved Uni the Unicorn doll. And she thinks that's going to scare Grandma Thora off. DW gets this idea because she gets hit with a water balloon by the Tibbles. But what's weird is the Tibbles throw the water balloons. One hits DW, one hits Nadine, who isn't real. So what happened to that one?
That's some of that classic season one magical realism creeping back in.
And we later see that Nadine even has a babysitting time with Thora. She has a comically large pocket watch that vibrates, which was a little bit strange to see. It turns out Grandma Thora is even great with the Tibbles. She creates what is called the Tough Guy Obstacle Course for them. It's this outdoor obstacle course, and she runs them ragged through it. By the end, they're just like just bent over and just panting, but they love it. And it's just like, that is really, really smart. We've, of course, seen Arthur babysit the Tibbles, but the key is to get them to tire themselves out, which you can tell. We're dealing with an expert babysitter here. At this point, DW is getting desperate. She really wants her grandma back. So she decides to poison Thora, not poison her, but like against the kids. So she says that, oh, you know, the first time she babysits you, it's great. But then after that, she makes you watch all this boring TV and she makes you go to bed before the sun goes down. And she has a spider collection and some of them are poisonous. And so this scares off the kids from wanting to be babysat by Thora. And then DW gets exactly what she wants. She gets Grandma Thora back for babysitting, but then she does the things that DW accused her of. So she turns on the TV, and instead of watching the movie that DW wants to watch, they're going to watch the Handy Hal show, which we don't see very much of. He's talking about winterizing part of your home, but enough to know
Handy
that it's
Hal.
Boring.
First of all, Handy Hal dressed exactly like an upcoming episode of For the Kids, where we're going to be talking about... We're going to be talking about Bob the Builder. Handy Hal kind of got a similar fit going on here. I love the mustache. I like the presentation. I think Handy Hal, this is our throwaway character of the week, Will. That's right. He beat out the teenage babysitter to be the throwaway character of the week.
Wow. Good on Handy Hal. And I mean, like, it seems like he's doing his job quite well. So I would expect that to be true. And Thora also insists that DW go to bed as soon as they sit down, and then spills some fake spiders on her. And this is because Thora, of course, heard all the things that DW said through what the kids were saying about her. And the resolution of this episode is essentially Grandma Thora saying no. Like not literally saying no, but DW says, like, oh, I was really worried that if you kept babysitting other kids, then you wouldn't want to babysit me. No. That's it. And all is forgiven. Dust off the hands. Another successful episode in the bag. I will say that the episode actually ends with DW trying the kale cauliflower tart, and she likes it, which is in keeping with DW's character. It seems that she really likes the combination of vegetables and, like, savory crusts, like the Little Bo Peep pot pie much earlier. So the kale cauliflower tart, not that far removed from a pie filled with spinach.
Yeah, it's like a Australian meat pie, sans the meat.
Maybe DW is going to grow up to be like a vegetarian or a vegan or something. Maybe it's just like meat that she's not crazy about. All right. You might be looking at your podcast app and being like, they can't be at the end of the episode now. It's like, well, kinda. Let's go back. Talk about a DW heavy episode here. Start off with Bud's naughty problem. You had at least one positive thing to say about this, Lucas. What did you think of it overall?
Well, I had that positive thing to say up front because overall, and Will, you know, I don't want to mislead the listeners. I don't want them to think that this is a purely objective look at these episodes. A lot of times when we watch these episodes of Arthur, we're bringing in the mindset in which we viewed them. And full disclosure, I am coming down with a cold.
Oh, no.
My sinuses are hurting. I did eat a clove of garlic before we started watching this episode to get me in podcast shape.
Wow.
And I gotta say, in my kind of not 100% state, I hated this episode.
Whoa.
I hated Bud's naughty problem.
Whoa.
I couldn't wait for it to be over. I hate listening to Bud act like a yokel.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make matters any better that, you know, and it's not Bud's fault. If DW was delivering the same things, it'd be like, oh, this cute little kid dealing with these problems that we've really figured out as adults, you know. Oh, they can't tie their shoes. That's so sweet. You know, being a little kid, it sure is something. But because of Bud's delivery, it's like, well, golly gee, I never heard of shoes. Like, we gotta deal with that for 10 minutes, and I was just like, oh gosh, turn it off.
Mm.
Make it stop. And also, it's just un-Arthur-like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more reminiscent of other kind of below 10 years old children's television where it's like super educational and they're talking about like these really kind of remedial subjects. There's no nuance to this. It's just Bud learns to tie his shoes. Stupid. I don't want to. But I will say, again, it's not all bad. I did really like that dream sequence, and I thought that was an interesting way of conveying Bud's state of mind, and the stuff about the signing the check and Bud saying that he was vexed. That made me funny. Bud saying he's vexed, that's good Bud writing.
Yes.
Because it was reminiscent of something that DW would say. Like, DW is at her funniest when she's kind of speaking above her age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes she has a almost just wise beyond her years vocabulary of way of speaking, and that's some of her more legendary kind of line deliveries. And similarly, when Bud uses a turn of phrase like, well, I am vexed, that's when the Bud voice actually works unironically. I know we have a lot of ironic love for the Bud voice at this point, but it's actually really annoying when he's like, I never heard of an iPhone app. Like, when he's just being stupid, it doesn't do him any favors. But when he says something kind of funny, the Bud voice can work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not all bad. And if I kind of let my compromised state put that to the back burner, you know, it's not this horrible episode or whatever. But right now, here in 2024, March 19th, when we're watching this, I hated it. What did you think, Will?
Well, I am sorry to hear that you're getting sick and you had a bad time with this episode. I'm gonna remember that garlic thing, though. I've never heard of that remedy.
I'm going to blow your mind, Will.
Go for it. Okay. Yeah.
So, vampires, okay, they're repelled by garlic, right?
Yeah.
So, a vampire in folklore is a metaphor for pestilence and disease. Okay, and so the reason they're repelled by garlic is because all the stuff that's, you know, good for you in garlic, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm some sort of healthcare professional.
Sure.
But, you know, those repel vampires. And so that's why, you know, vampires are repelled by garlic, but it's true in real life in that, you know, people always talk about taking ginger or garlic supplements when they're sick. I suppose because it's an immune system booster or something like that, but that's why they repel vampires in folklore. And I'm Italian, so I trust in garlic.
All right, I'm going to have to keep this under my hat for the next time I get sick. I'll keep that in mind. Hate's a strong word, and I'm not going to use that, but I didn't like it. I did not like this episode, and I think I hate to be so predictable. You know, I teased at the end of the last episode, like, uh-oh, it's a Bud episode. What are we going to think about that? And it's like, we don't go into these episodes wanting to dislike them. Not even the ones with characters that we don't care for. Like, right now, The Brain or LaDonna or Bud. You know, you can have good episodes with characters we don't like. And the best, you know, we always want these characters to reform. We want to find reasons to like them. And as you said, there's like one or two things in this episode that work. Otherwise, it's like, this is one of those episodes that I mentioned earlier that's just like, it's for the people around DW and Bud's age, the children around DW and Bud's age watching it. And so we're already watching a children's show that's aimed at 8-year-olds. Then we start watching a show that's aimed at 4-year-olds, and it's just like, oh boy. Like, it just reminds me of all of the shows that we've watched for the kids that are like, way, way, way below like what we would normally be watching. And it's like, you know, like watching Boobah or something. And it's just like, oh, there's nothing here. And aside from some odd animation and like we said, the delivery, Lucas, you like that dream sequence. I was not feeling this at all. I will say also, I had to get up early today, and so I did watch this early. So, like, hey, maybe if we were in better moods, we would have loved it or something, but I still don't think so. Like, I didn't really like this. And I will say, I didn't care for the second part of the episode, That's My Grandma. It was, Bud didn't show up, so that's not a point in its favor, but it's not a point against it. But it was just, and I did appreciate that we still have Grandma Thor kicking around as a character. Thumbs up for that one. This is kind of like it's a bit of a shrug, especially considering how like easily everything is deflated. It did again feel like this is for the kiddie kids who are like, you know, we're just, what if my grandma wants to not be my grandma anymore? No, she doesn't. Shut up. Like, and basically Grandma Thor is just like, no, you're wrong. And that's it. We're done. There was a couple of interesting things. I liked Grandma Thor outwitting the Tibbles and being like, I like when Grandma Thor gets to be like cool and really good. She's like, she's kind of like, if I can use a Dragon Ball metaphor here, she's like the Piccolo of this, of Arthur. She's like secretly kind of the best one, if you really think about it. But she doesn't always have to be in your face about how good and cool she is. She lays in the background, and then after a while, you get to remember, oh yeah, Grandma Thor is kind of awesome. So this was very much dealing with her legend in a way, DW kind of walking in her shadow. But I'm making it sound better than it is. It was just like, eh. And then a couple of other things, just like, yeah, that replacement sitter who is Polly Lockett, that was a weird choice. Yeah, not much to say about that other than that. There is also, I will mention, I put this on the ECL Discord, when DW is saying to her friends about, like, oh, she has like a collection of spiders, and there's a line that Emily has where she's like, oh no, Grandma Thor is going to be babysitting me tomorrow for the second time. And she looks right at the camera, and her eyes are so big. She looks like a fish. It was really off-putting. I took a screen cap of it. I'll put it up on the socials at some point after this episode hits the free feed. But it was just, again, it's similar to that thing you were talking about with like Bud's head being really big. It's just like little things here and there. They're just like, ugh, that doesn't look amazing. Anyway, shrug.
I kind of liked this one. And maybe, you know, I was more open. I perhaps might have been more open to it because I was just so kind of like, oh man, are we going to just be getting these Bud and LaDonna episodes until we're done the whole show? And like, is this what this podcast is going to be week in and week out? Is hearing Bud and LaDonna be like, I never rode an airplane in my life. What are them newfangled flying machines?
Clock into the Bud and LaDonna factory.
And so maybe in my compromised state, you know, Gatorade in hand, I was thinking to myself, ah, DW, Grandma Thora, characters I reckon, the Tibble twins.
Yeah.
I love these guys. These are my Arthur friends, Will. DW's, you know, she's being sassy.
Yeah.
She's worried. And you know what? I thought for me, when we're talking about Kitty episodes, this is actually an interesting conversation and an interesting point of comparison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bud's episode is a Kitty episode because it's about learning to tie your shoes.
Yes.
I think that being jealous that your grandpa is expressing affection to other people and you thought it was just reserved for you is a little bit more interesting. And it's not necessarily something I've seen elsewhere in comparison, right? So I think this is the difference between, obviously, this is one of the episodes directed towards a younger audience, but I have far more patience with something like this because I think it is kind of this kind of left of field Arthur take on something as opposed to the very literal Bud's naughty problem. And so I was just in a sour mood, and I was kind of along the ride for That's My Grandma. And also the millennials beyond they phone stuff, I kind of found it a little bit funny. I'm not going to lie. Sure, it's an easy target, and sure, it's kind of obvious and trite. But I think after Bud's naughty problem, I was going to grab on to anything. So I kind of had a fun. It's not going to be my top five episodes of the season or anything like that. But by comparison, I had fun with That's My Grandma.
Okay. At least it ended more positively than it began, which is sometimes all you can hope for. You know, I think this is probably the first, like, dud episode of the season in terms of a lot of the ones we've had so far we've liked to even loved. So that's doing pretty well in terms of how many episodes we have in this season, and we only have a few left. So by shortening the episode order, maybe we can actually like improve the overall season quality. Not that it needed like stark improvement or something, but maybe just, yeah, we can concentrate the good bits a little bit more. So yeah, that's what we think about that episode of Arthur. We're of course always interested to hear what you have to say on social media and our email, and if you're a patron on our Discord. Speaking of Patreon, so we've been talking about how we've got For the Kids coming up at the end of this month. And the end of this month, if you're on Patreon, is next week. So that means we are going to be having For the Kids as our next release. And it's going to be about Bob the Builder. I'm going to have to do some bit of research in the next little bit on Bob the Builder and what exactly it is. And if it's any good, I'll be very interested to check it out with you, Lucas, as we head into WrestleMania season. There is also one more piece of content that will be coming first to Patreon and then to the free feed. So if you're not on our Patreon, you will have to wait a week for this. But if you are on Patreon, you're going to be getting the new ECL Presents, which is really, really exciting. I got the chance to speak with the GBH social media manager, Kathleen Cusacks. She is the person who runs the Arthur social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and more. It was really cool getting to speak with her. And I will say, again, if you're on the Patreon, you're going to be getting a special announcement about the next Arthur digital short before anybody else. So that interview is going to be coming out on April 5th, Friday, April 5th. I have it scheduled in the Patreon. It is locked in. And then it will be on the free feed on Friday, April 12th, a month later. So if you want to know what the big news is before everybody else, you got to sign up. Patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. But you will be getting it in the next few weeks, no matter what. It's a great interview. Kathleen was a wonderful subject and had a lot of cool things to say about working in social media, working for Arthur specifically, and a lot more. So I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. So we've got For the Kids coming up very soon, and then we also have a new ECL Presents interview coming, and then we're also going to be digging back into Elwood City Limits before you know it. The next episode we're going to be tackling in Arthur Season 20 is Lend Me Your Ear and The Butler Did It. Now I may be having to call on a special guest for that one, because Lucas, you're going to WrestleMania.
That's right. I'm pointing to the sign right now, and I'm almost glad I'm getting sick now.
Yes.
Because wouldn't it be bad to be sick at WrestleMania?
And, yeah, load up on garlic. Bring a little bit in your pocket if you need to for the trip to Mania, and make sure that you enjoy yourself. We're still going to be able to get in For the Kids before you head off, but ECL continues on whether you're on the Patreon or the free feed. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Elwood City Limits. My name's Will Young, and for Lucas Mancini,
Grandma Thora isn't coming. She's just playing and eating and having fun.
We'll see you next time. Good delivery on that one.